Gavin's Den is Wrecking Ball Radio.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Davin's End, Filling the Void. Yes, Davin's End, the show that is better than seeking help from an imposter posing as the FBI. I am your host, Davin Rosenblatt. I am joined by Joe Curry and Pip Alex.
Hello, Joe. Hi, everybody.
Hello, Pip. I talked over you guys.
It's okay. So we do it to you all the time.
You do. You're terrible human beings. On the show, former FBI agent Vinny D'Agostino will be telling us what the FBI does can't do to fight cybercrime. We're going to really get into that. That is something that, as long as I've been doing this cybercrime thing and the scamming thing and this hacking thing, people always want to know, and it's hard to get answers. So it's good to have somebody who worked in the FBI in that department and now is doing it, now that he's left the agency, he's doing it now for a private company. So it's going to be very informative, and we have a brand new School of Fools, which we will get to. So I started my new job. As it's one of my other jobs, Joe. I started my new job as working support for a cam girl, which, if you don't know what a cam girl is, it's in the adult industry. There's one camera on her, and people can communicate with her, and they can tip her if she does certain acts, or tip her to get naked. It's basically tip her, give her money.
Yes,
that's basically
yes.
what it does. I was brought in to as enhancement talent.
Enhancement.
Enhancement.
Please explain.
I do not let the people know. This was my choosing, and she agreed. Do not let the folks know that I am in there. But I want to generate tips for her, try to fill the voids, if you will, in those dull moments.
Okay, I'm glad you explained.
I most certainly did. You know, because sometimes people are not talking.
So yes.
I gave her ideas. I did research. I gave her some of the games, some of the naughtier games from our show, like Who Has the Biggest Flagpole.
Right.
Some of the survey, the games that I've made with Pornhub statistics.
Mm-hmm.
I did all of these things. So I started work last week.
Right.
Basically, work consists of me sitting at the computer and watching her do her thing and conversing with people, and we private message each other.
Well, that's tough.
get on his bandwagon.
No, I'm just sorry. I'm like,
that's the one career where I haven't been able to help Joe. But who knows?
I put the pillow to the left side. Put the pillow over there. It looks nicer.
I'm not directing. Well, though, in a way, I am. Can you imagine?
Wait, that's a much better angle.
You're using it wrong. Well, I think she knows. Yeah.
Is that bed from IKEA? Okay.
That doesn't look safe.
Yeah. Doesn't look safe. You might want to tighten that up.
Yeah, you got the angle wrench?
Are we talking about? We're talking about the bed.
We're talking about the bed.
I think if I say that to anything else,
yeah,
I'd be out of bounds.
On the bed, yes.
Yeah, furniture.
So she puts this thing in, and she likes to play music. A lot of these girls like to play music.
Yeah.
So she puts the challenge out there.
Okay.
That she can make any song sexy.
Oh, wow.
So I came up with a song.
Oh, to challenge her?
I most certainly did.
Okay, what was the one?
Well, I'll take a guess. What song would I pick? Because you know I'm going to make it difficult.
The Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Good guess. You know it ain't AC/DC. You shook me all night long.
You showed her.
What do you think?
I'm thinking something that would be really hard to make sexy, like the Proclaimers. I would walk 500 miles.
That's a good drinking song, though.
It's
good.
Not a good shaking the booty song.
Yeah, no, you can wave a cask of beer around, but you really can't wave anything else around.
You're both wrong.
Okay, what?
You get nothing.
Oh, of course.
I picked the Star Spangled Banner.
And I tell you, you're not patriotic.
That's patriotic of me, right?
Yeah, but the bomb's bursting in air. She's got to be done at that point, and there's a lot more song.
Well, here's the thing. She picked the guitar version. I did not see that coming. As it would be.
You must have walked away from the computer for a moment.
Oh, that's funny.
She picked the guitar version, and she pulled it off.
Boy, it gets worse and worse.
She made it sexy, so I feel like I lost, but I am impressed that she rose to the occasion.
Hats off to her. A lot of other things.
So I gave her like topics. Like I gave her, I go, you know, put in there what's the best place any of these guys, because mostly men have ever had sex. And I put the first one, like, not real. And I put 25 tokens to play. She's like, well, guys won't answer these type of questions. I'm like, listen, these are men.
Oh, yeah,
they're peacocking. They're going to try to impress you.
Yes.
So they are going to answer. And sure enough, they did.
Wow.
So I made her some money.
Oh, that was a good idea.
Yes. The downside is my wife is very angry at me at the time.
Oh.
Because part of the thing is, you got to tip a certain amount, get to a certain amount of money to see her naked.
Yeah.
Most of the time I'm in there, or she's fully clothed.
Right.
It's a whole buildup.
Yeah. A striptease has to start with the tease.
Right. So it's like she comes in fully clothed. Then, you know, after 2 hours, you get to naked.
Okay.
And then after a bunch of time, you get to the big climax show.
Mm-hmm.
As it would. But I don't
How long is the show? How long is the show?
It could be hours, dude.
Really?
It could be hours.
I'm exhausted thinking about that.
She has a goal that she wants to reach.
Of course
she
does.
It's like a telethon.
It is.
She has this
goal. I want to say something, but I won't.
There's a goal that everybody wants her to reach, actually. But you mean money.
That's the payoff.
All right.
Everybody leaves happy.
There's a payoff and a payoff.
Exactly. But I'm not really. I only have to work a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
But so she does get naked.
Before you've clocked out.
As luck would have
before
it this
I
time.
Clocked out. Well, I'm heading out now, Chief.
By the way, for the censors, she said clocked.
Clocked. Yes.
Clocked.
Yes.
She said clocked. So the wife was very unhappy, and she slept on the couch.
Really?
Yeah, it was an issue for like 2 days.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But, I mean, all the porn you have to watch for this show and this one broad is the one.
Well, we don't talk about that in every day. Get a load of this.
Yeah. Honey.
I didn't even think that was possible, but here's the videotape.
Yeah. Honey, come here and watch this one. This is hilarious.
So, I am no longer working. I am on hiatus because the performer needs to figure out how to use me better.
Oh, boy.
I'm on hiatus.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
So, the wife is happier.
Yeah.
Such a sordid, tangled life I live. All right. When we're coming back, you're listening to Davins. When we come back, former FBI agent Vinny D'Agostino. We are at Davins Den. We are back. Joe and Pip Helix, and we are joined by former FBI agent and current cyber security specialist at K2 Intelligence, Mr. Vinny D'Agostino. Hello, Vin.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, Vin.
Thank you for joining Davin's Den. Joe knows Vinny for a long time.
Yes.
We met Pip and myself met Vinny at our former radio home, so it's good to reunite with Vin.
Yes.
A good guy with common sense. Right, Vin?
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here, guys. Thank you.
So, when I got into this whole cyber crime and hacking and cyber security type thing, a lot of people wanted to know what the FBI could do, can't do, what their jurisdiction is, what red flags should be raised, and it's very hard to get these type of definitive answers. I mean, you can look online, and some answers are online, but not everything is. So we're very excited to be able to bring these answers, courtesy of Vinny, to our fans. Vinny, how long were you in the FBI?
About 11 years before I left.
11 years. And how long have you been at K2 Intelligence?
About a year now.
And what were you doing? I know you had a couple of different jobs in the FBI. What was your cybersecurity aspect of your work?
Yeah, that's right. Like I said, I was there for 11 years. The first 7 years or so, I was working Italian organized crime, and then I made the switch over to cyber, and more specifically, the non-state sponsored criminal cyber intrusion squad, which was out of the New York office in Manhattan.
Did some of these responsibilities deal with scammers?
Yeah, indirectly, as you know, that's sort of a broad term. But, you know, most of the criminal-based intrusions, or a lot of the criminal-based intrusions, did touch on some sort of scam element, whether it was a spear phishing email that was the initial source or some form of social engineering. So a lot of the investigations did touch on the things that most people would consider scammers.
Several years ago, the CIA came out and said that some of these scammers were sending money back to terrorist organizations like Boko Haram, which, as we all know, has pledged allegiance to ISIS. Did you see any of the that trend in your work?
No, I would say that most of the stuff we dealt with on my squad dealt, like I said, with the non-state sponsored and therefore almost by definition the non-terrorist sponsored.
Mm-hmm.
So they were financially motivated, and most of the people who did the scams that we investigated were pure profit-driven as far as their motivations went.
How well, because you hear all different things, whatever the story is, whatever's going on, you always hear these different things that the FBI or the CIA or the police, they don't communicate well with other branches of law enforcement. Did you feel that what you were doing, you were able to communicate well if you needed to with local law enforcement?
Yeah, you're asking specifically with regard to cyber-related crime?
Yeah, right. In your experience, did you find there was you were able to have a successful relationship with other areas of law enforcement?
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. I would say the distinction to be made regarding cyber as compared to, you know, non-pure cyber-related crimes is that cyber really has no home. Cyber is almost by definition an international based crime. It's very difficult to commit any type of crime, any type of cyber crime, without crossing into states and for certain other countries. And so when you're talking about investigating crimes with a central cyber, as a facilitating mechanism at its core, you have to work closely with not only state and local, but really international counterparts in order to get these cases done.
That makes a lot of sense. What were some of the responsibilities that you had in regards to dealing with these financial scammers, as you were?
So it would depend on the case. I mean, the responsibilities as a special agent obviously were, you know, to investigate these cases, and that meant, you know, conducting interviews, review of, collect information, digital data. It might be forensics of a computer. It might be NetFlow data, and you'd have to do analysis on that to figure out, depending on what you were looking for, whether it was there or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then a big part of that is liaising with other law enforcement agencies, or in many of my cases, liaising with the international community, whether it be through Europol in general or other federal law enforcement agencies in certain countries, in order to get the information you need and also be responsive to their requests to provide them with information that they would need. So if a server ended up in the Netherlands, then you had to make those formal requests to the government to say, hey, we would like, you know, an image of that hard drive of that server, but you're dealing with a country that has could have a very different set of rules when it comes to, you know, judicially, you know, a very different set of rules when it comes to seizure of that type of information. So it's very interesting. It's different than a lot of other violations because you're faced with, more often than almost any other type of crime, you're faced with dealing with other nations and their laws, and trying to navigate that isn't always easy.
Is it easier for someone in your position to deal with, say, people in Western Europe than, say, somebody in Eastern Europe, Asia, or Africa? Are certain regions easier for you to get what you need?
I could only speak to my experience. My experience was I dealt many, many times with Europol in The Hague.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had nothing but a positive experience with the members of Europol through the course of our investigations. I've never had the opportunity to work with any other, I'm trying to think offhand, any countries based out of Africa or members of European nations that aren't a member of Europol. But my experience is always very positive dealing with Europol.
Is everybody in Europol, is that everybody who's part of the European Union? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So now Great Britain is talking about leaving the European Union. So would they leave Europol as well?
You know, I don't know. I haven't been following that very closely.
Okay. What do you think the biggest threat to private citizens' safety is on the internet? What did you say?
Ironically, it's something that's been around since basically the inception. It's email. Email is very often the vector used by not only scammers, but hardcore hackers who are looking to gain entry into a network. because they know that's the easiest way past your perimeter security is to, by crafting very, very well-designed emails that are going to come from seemingly legitimate domains that are going to get into your inbox as an employee. You're going to click on it. You're either going to download something without knowing, or you're going to visit a site and enter credentials without knowing. And now you've just provided an opening into your company or into your house. And so that, to me, is something that we saw at the FBI, and I continue to see at K2 Intelligence during our course of our investigation, is the email compromise is very often the vector and the preferred vector for threat actors.
So it's that initial click that really opens up the gateway for Pandora's box and lets the criminal in.
Yeah, and the worst part is that oftentimes it's not like there's sort of an aha on the part of the victim. You know, oftentimes this can be sent as, you know, a fake invoice in the form of a PDF file mm-hmm. that somebody opens and, you know, looks at the file and says, well, this doesn't look right, closes it and goes about their business. Well, you know, they just actually let whatever it is in at that point. There was malicious code attached to that PDF that now is you know, beginning to gain its persistence on that machine, and it's going to pivot, you know, once that person brings that machine, whether it's home or back into their office. And so we can't tell you how many times those compromises, those investigations will come back, and the point of compromise is going to be just a seemingly innocuous email that was the first domino to fall in a series of really bad events for a company or even for, you know, a person, just a person's home network.
And anybody susceptible. It was just reported that Russia hacked the DNC, the Democratic National Party, or chair, whatever the committee, whatever it is, to get information on Donald Trump, believe it or not. So anybody can really fall victim. Yeah. To things like this. What types of cybercrime / scamming cases should be reported to the FBI instead of local law enforcement? Because I know on this show we always tell, well, your first step should be inform the local authorities.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's good advice. You know, it's all going to depend on where you are in the country and that whether or not that local police department has investigators that are assigned to or capable of working, you know, internet-based crimes. And so that's something that is a challenge for law enforcement because you're dealing with, in many instances, a learning gap or knowledge gap in the investigators who maybe didn't grow up with this technology. And so you have a lot of crimes that are happening that the cornerstone of what had happened maybe occurred online. Mm-hmm. And it takes a different type of knowledge to investigate those type of cases. And so I would say absolutely report it locally. I would absolutely report it to the FBI, keeping in mind that depending on the nature of the crime that you suspect that it occurred, you know, it may literally go be routed into sort of a case file of, you know, thousands of other victims who have fallen for the same scam or fallen victim to the same scam. So you may not necessarily hear back. It doesn't mean it was unnoticed. It just means that there are, you know, you're one of thousands who have maybe, you know, fallen victim to this particular type of scam.
That is a complaint that I hear, and honestly, I don't know anybody who's reported a cybercrime to the FBI and has heard back. And I know I reported something that I know a lot of people weren't working on. Now, I was not a direct victim, but I did report to the FBI, and it's very frustrating for when people feel like they're doing the right thing, especially if they have something at stake like finances, that they don't hear back. Do people hear back? Sure. There are people that hear back, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was there, I personally, you know, visited many victims who reported who their initial contact was with the FBI was through IC3. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember is that, you know, you're dealing with you know, the FBI in you know, nationwide is maybe represented by 12,000 or so agents. The sheer number of cyber crimes that are reported, even on a weekly basis, would take, you know, every single one of those agents, you know, all of their time to investigate. And obviously, all of those agents are not just working cyber. There's a million other types of violations that the FBI investigates. So it should just show you that should just be sort of acknowledgement of how big of a problem this is. When mm-hmm. oftentimes you can file a complaint and you may not hear back, you know. It really depends on the circumstances of what you're reporting and the nature of what happened as a result of the crime, you know, whether it be a monetary loss or, you know, in worst situations, you're talking about, you know, losses in the tens or even hundreds of millions if someone gained access to a system and wreaked havoc. You know, things that affect infrastructure are always going to get a greater degree of a response from the federal government, of course, because those things affect a greater number of people. So there's so many factors that go into it that it's a good idea to absolutely report it, but you should be realistic in terms of what you're reporting and whether that's going to justify sort of the time and resources of the FBI, which, you know, is limited. And how many things they can do at the same time.
Well, you know from dealing with victims as I do that everybody thinks, you know, their situation is the most pressing situation. I mean, we're dealing with desperate people here. So you know, people that they report, the proper place to report is IC3.gov. So then it goes to yourself when you were there and other agents. You kind of touched on it. Infrastructure is going to get number one priority. Is there a certain monetary threshold where it's like, if it's like $200,000 loss versus $7,000 loss? Like, what type of threshold should somebody realistically expect that they might get a response from you?
There's no monetary threshold, and I personally work cases where the damages were as low as, you know, several thousand dollars, and as high as in the millions. So it's not really the money that's going to be the driving factor. It's going to be the circumstances and the nature of the breach. So, like I said, somebody who, you know, was an employee at a facility that did sensitive research that left and maybe is suspected of gaining access to those systems post-employment for the purposes of taking that information and selling it, right? That's the monetary damage to that, and that could be zero technically. But the damage to, you know, other projects that are maybe really important and damage to the company or even the country would be very high in that example. And so that might get, you know, a lot of attention, even though the losses in that might not actually be quantifiable.
So every complaint that is filed via IC3 is read, is looked at. Everyone is taken into consideration. But basically, because we don't have vast resources, the chances of somebody who has personal loss getting response is not as great as, like, say, there could be a whole big chain of events that leads to a bigger calamity. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you have to remember, if let's say you've fallen victim to a particular type of scam, and, you know, let's say it's a Nigerian print scam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your run-of-the-mill Nigerian print scam, and you've reported that now, that will go to a case file with thousands of other victims. Now, if that's being investigated, the government or any law enforcement agency isn't going to need 3,000 witnesses, right?
Right.
They might need a handful. And so you may never get contacted because they've already picked out 3 or 4 witnesses / victims to speak to, and now they're content with going forward with that case, you know, without having to call each one of them because that's not practically possible. And so that's what you have to remember. You know, you might not always know that something's being done about it because you're just one of literally thousands and thousands of victims in a particular case.
If the FBI does decide to contact the victim, how are they going to contact that victim? Because we see all sorts of reload scams where people are scammed and then scammers try to get them on the back end, you know, pretending to be FBI. What's the official way that the FBI is going to let you know they're looking into your case?
Most of the time it'll be in person, but that doesn't mean you might not get a phone call. What I would say is, anytime I've ever contacted someone via telephone and identified myself when I was doing this, I understood completely that there should be a fair amount of skepticism that I would come to meet on the other end of that phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would offer them I would acknowledge that, you know, look, I know I'm reaching out to you on the phone. I know you've probably never spoken to an FBI agent before. Here are the things I suggest you do to verify who I am, like hang up the phone, go to Google, look up the FBI New York office, call the main number, ask to speak to me, and they'll transfer you to my cell phone. And then at least you can complete the circle and say, look, you know, unless I've compromised Google, also and compromised the FBI's.
Well, we know somebody who would believe that.
And then had it routed to me, you know, then you should feel confident. You know, if someone's coming to you in person, you should always check identification.
Mm-hmm.
There's with any law enforcement officer, there's going to be some form of identification number that you can contact their local office to verify that the person knocking on your door is legitimate. And most law enforcement officers, agents of any type are going to understand that, because those are the same things we would expect our family to do if somebody knocked on the door unannounced, claiming that they were, you know, with the FBI. And, you know, we don't wear uniforms. We didn't wear uniforms, obviously. I mean, they still don't. So it makes it a little bit trickier, and so you have to be, you know, you have to understand that. But I would be very skeptical of somebody who's calling you, claiming to be to work for the government, who's asking a lot of information of you. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, "Hey, I'd rather meet in person," or "Hey, can I call you back? What's the number at your office? Get off the phone, research the phone number, and then call them back." There's nothing wrong with that.
So they're not going to email you with a Gmail account, is what you're saying?
Definitely not. You're always going to get an at FBI. ic@fbi.gov email address. If you get anything from someone claiming to work for the government from a Gmail or worse, you know, some random domain, you know, that is absolutely a scam.
What are some other red flags that you should be aware of when imposters pretend to be from the FBI?
If they're trying to scare you over the phone, you know, that IRS scam, you know, that's been going around for years, where the IRS agent supposedly tells you, you know, there's going to be a warrant out for your arrest. You know, that's never going to happen on a phone conversation. You know, no one's going to call you to threaten, you know, to force you to do something and threaten that they're going to arrest you if you don't do it.
No pressure tactics.
What's that?
The FBI is never going to give you pressure tactics, rush you, say if you don't do this, you're going to face said penalty. Never going to do that.
No, and if you're talking about, even if it's some sort of interview that went direction, that would be a face-to-face interview. That's not going to be a phone call to get you to do something. Another thing that's very popular when you're talking about cyber specific scams is getting control of your machine. So oftentimes the caller is going to create a situation. Oh, I work at Microsoft. We've identified a problem with your computer. Get you to download some sort of remote client like TeamViewer to give that person access to your machine. And so, you know, someone working for the government is never going to ask you to download software and install it on your machine while over the phone. And that's another red flag.
Well, and if they show up at the door and they happen to be carrying a boombox, they're a stripper. They're not really the FBI.
Very true.
So the FBI will never charge a fee for a victim for trying to catch. The FBI is not a money making organization.
No.
I'm going to collect some cash.
I mean, Vinny. I mean, you and I. We talk. It seems. You know, it seems a lot far-fetched to us, but unfortunately there are desperate people out there, and this is common. I'm sure you've seen this as well.
Oh, yeah. It's extremely common. And you know, one of the things when myself and three other agents left the FBI and went over to K2 Intelligence, was that was the whole idea, was to be able to provide these services for people who may not be able to get attention from law enforcement because of how overwhelming of a problem this is, and we could provide those services, you know, on a private level, the very similar things that we were doing for the FBI now for our private clients, which is a really great feeling for us because there's so many people that need this kind of help.
Absolutely. Can the FBI catch scammers and criminals in foreign countries? You mentioned that you work with Europol. I mean, if there's somebody in Nigeria, can you go to Nigeria or have the Nigerian authorities arrest them?
Very, very difficult. It all depends on the country, and it depends on their judicial system. So if you're dealing with a country that's based in a judicial system similar to ours, then you stand a chance. There's extradition that you can do, and that's something why many times cases are handled by the FBI, because the FBI has mechanisms in place, or other federal agencies to get these people extradited and charged. But when you're talking about countries that may qualify as third world, they might not even have an infrastructure that supports the idea of an extradition or an arrest or due process of any kind. And so when it comes to that, that's why you're seeing a lot of these crimes originate from those countries, because there's not much that can be done, even if it's traced back to someone's residence within that country.
So that explains why, because we know a lot of these scams originate in Western African countries. That explains why when people are even filing with you guys, even if the FBI does want to do something, it's just so hard to actually get anything meaningful accomplished.
Exactly right. Very, very difficult.
See, that's very important for victims to hear, because there's all these people out there, and again, I know you see them promising that if you pay us, we're going to go to Nigeria, or that your scammer's been arrested, and money's going to get returned. Does money get returned to victims if they catch the scammer?
Yeah, I mean, that's just a natural process of, you know, if the person's arrested, there can be restitution ordered by the courts, mm-hmm. and that's not unique to cybercrime. That's true of all crime. So, you know, somebody commits a robbery of some type or a fraud of some type, you know, the court, you know, upon conviction, the court can order the return of funds. And so the problem is that oftentimes, you know, with any criminal, you know, this money's spent the minute it's not like it's set aside necessarily. So oftentimes the money's gone. Mm-hmm. So there may be a judgment against that person that's there for the rest of their life to repay X amount that never gets paid. And that's fairly common.
Do you know if, and we got to wrap this up very quickly here. Do you know if the courts would charge a victim for the procedures to get the money back?
No. Something's handled criminally, there's never a cost to the victim. Now, obviously, on a civil side, if there's a civil suit filed, that's a completely different story. But from the criminal perspective, there's never a cost. There's never a cost that's assessed for the victim to return that. It's all the costs associated with that process are actually levied against the defendant if they're convicted. They have to pay for that process.
So would you say, even as well-meaning as the FBI would, due to the difficulties with foreign nations, some who we have relationships, some we don't, and just manpower, if you get scammed, you should still report it, but the chances of you ever seeing justice is fairly remote?
No, I would say it's just a case-to-case basis. It's very difficult to throw it in a bucket like that. It's a case-to-case basis, and it really just depends on the nature of the scam. I can't tell you how many times I would go out to speak to people, and they would say, hey, I never thought you'd actually come talk to me. This is really great, you know? And so, yeah, for every one of those, there's other people that we couldn't, you know, the FBI couldn't devote their attention to. But it's not something that I would say, you know, don't bother, because, you know, that's just the nature of how these things are done. It's taken on a case-by-case basis.
Vin, before I let you go, you obviously are very knowledgeable in this. If somebody has been scammed and they haven't gotten necessarily what they want from the government, how can people find you and your colleagues at K2 Intelligence?
K2Intelligence.com is a great place to start. You know, one of the things I know we talked about prior to jumping on this call was, you know, the fact that myself and three other people had left the FBI within the last year or so to sort of bring these services over to the private sector. So, I mean, that's a great place to start would be the website. There's plenty of information you can read about our bios and our experiences. And then there's, you know, give us a call, and we'll absolutely be willing to talk to you about any issues you might have.
Vin, we hope to have you on in the future, maybe talking about K2 Intelligence, what you're doing over there. Thank you so much for illuminating so much light, which means so much to so many of our fans. We appreciate it. Thanks,
Vin. Thanks, Vin.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care, pal.
Good night.
Bye. Back here listening to Davin's Den, we just had a great interview with Vinny D'Agostino, former FBI guy, K2 Intelligence. Now we're going to talk to somebody who is not anything like Vinny. Joe! There's a lot of upheaval in your life.
Oh my God, is there. I get my house ready to sell. My house is going to be on the market this week.
Wow.
I have the realtors coming in on Thursday, and the public will be in on the 18th.
Mm.
Basically, I had to get the house presented for sale, which means there was at least 15 projects that I had to accomplish in regards to getting landscaping neatened up, painting the patio, doing the...
Are these things that you wanted to get done because you knew that they would be good, or things that your realtor had spoken
things
to
that
about?
That I wanted to get done.
Okay.
That the real estate agent agreed to me to get done.
Okay.
I have been working every free moment I can. I have been working 12-hour days outside. I've been taking days off from the day program to get this done. My estranged wife has done nothing.
That's so frustrating.
It's frustrating because it's essentially basically what she's been doing ever since we met. When I renovated the house 20 years ago, she did nothing to help, even after we were engaged.
So she's consistent.
Yeah. So I was hoping at that time that once, you know, we were married and we got the house underway, she would take more of a role in the house, and she never did.
Oh, were you thinking then that maybe she wasn't doing anything because it wasn't officially a part hers yet?
And yes. Like, and then after,
oh, you sweet delusional boy.
She didn't want to put the sweat equity in on something that's not her name.
Yeah, well,
right?
When I put 95 hours on the house when it was renovated, she put in 3. So after we were engaged too. So basically, she was not doing, you know, what she was supposed to, you know, doing and helping. So basically, with getting everything renovated, I've been working my fingers to the bone. All she had to do was clean out her guest room. That we have 4-bedroom house. We have the master bedroom, we have my music room, and we have my office, and we have her room that she uses to put her stuff in. And all she had to do was clean out that room, and she just dragged her feet, didn't do it, blah, blah, blah.
Do you think it's hard for her to say goodbye to the house, too, and she's not expressing it?
Maybe. But you want to know something? I lived there since I was 3, so I have a hard time, and I'm doing everything I got to do.
Yeah, but you know what? She's sitting on her butt, and you're doing all this work, and she can see you doing all this work, and I see you talking about it on Facebook, and it really frosts my cookies.
Yeah, it's really, it's just, that was a strong one. But
now,
but
I'm sorry
about that in the first segment.
I'm sorry, was that too much?
A little much. So, take it down a notch.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
So when so basically we were having pictures taken, we were having Merry Maids come in to do a top to bottom cleaning on Friday.
Yeah.
I asked her to get all the knickknacks off her bureau in the bedroom, off the mantle, off all this. I was going to clean up my stuff. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and she's not done anything. You know, she hasn't done anything. Okay.
Yeah, I know, it's frustrating.
So basically, I went off on her. I started taking all the knickknacks down, and she goes, "What are you doing?" I go, "I'm doing your job."
Yeah.
And she goes, "Well, be careful with them, because if you break anything, I'm calling the police."
Those Hummels aren't going to replace themselves.
I know. And I'm like, "Who are you going to bring? The knickknack squad?"
You're going to the paddywhack wagon.
Yeah, I go, "What?" Yes. I go, "What are they going to do? Are they going to put me in a jail made out of shells?"
No, they're called precious moments. A little respect.
Yeah. So basically with that, during the course of the show, I was emailing her tonight, and I told her that she has to get this all her knickknacks put away. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "Well, it's taking me a lot of time." I go, "It's 5 days. Will they have sentimental value? What are you, in a Julia Roberts movie? Pack them away."
She's taking them with her. It's not like they're being thrown away.
Yes. I know. So, it's like, how long does it take to wrap them in newspaper?
Yeah, so one of the things she said is that she goes, "Well, we have to get a survey for the real estate." I go, "It's in the safe. Go get it." "I don't want to go in the safe." I'm like, "I wish I could put you in there." So she sends me a text during the show, "Leave the survey on the kitchen table. Understood?" And I wrote, "Understood. What are you, a mob boss?"
Yeah.
I go, "Get that crap packed. And in the basement, understood?" And then she goes,
"Well, in her defense, sometimes it's not a bad question to ask with you."
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's not.
But she goes, "I'm using the language you use with me. I'm going to court and following an order of protection against you. I will not allow you to harass me like that."
Oh, please.
And I'm like,
"I've been doing it for the whole course of the marriage. Now, should you stop now?
Wait a minute,
can I get one of those?"
It should be a proclamation.
I need to talk to the soon-to-be ex. Yeah. We need to huddle up.
But it's like, it's just maddening, and I, you know, hopefully it'll be done soon, and it's just, she's not going to help. She won't help. So, you know,
it's almost over.
Yeah. Good luck. So, you know, that's pretty much the deal on that. So hopefully sunny days are coming soon.
Oh, poor Joe.
Poor Joe. All right. Got a little bit more show to do. Don't go anywhere. Davin's done. Pip's irritating me, so we'll let her talk.
What else is new?
So you got a life-changing event there.
Yes, for any of my friends.
She's finally going through the change, Joe. She's finally doing the reverse Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh, no, the doctor took care of all of that.
I said the reverse. You're growing things.
Oh,
you're adding on.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
For the show, it'd be fantastic.
For the show, I know, not for
she'll
Mr.
Paul
Helix.
Helix.
Paul Helix. I support that.
That's a nice name. I'd go with that. Sure. Yeah, why not? No, actually, for everybody who is a fan and my Facebook friends, you've seen me talk about the horrible job that I have, my day job. You're thinking I'm talking about this. No, actually, it's the daytime job. Well, I actually just got a letter of an offer for another job.
Yay!
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you.
Good girl.
So hopefully
she's not a dog.
She's a friend.
Is she?
It's a term.
Hopefully my evil overlord. Hopefully my evil overlord posts on Facebook will be few and far between now.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I found them entertaining.
I know. Most people did. But I think that a lot of people would be really happy to hear that.
Not ones that have to provide entertainment with you. An angry Pip is an entertaining Pip. That's what I always say.
That doesn't mean my life won't go down the you-know-what-er
We don't want your life to go down. We just want you to be irritated just enough to be irate.
Yes.
Oh, that'll happen.
Irritated enough just to be irate.
Sure, I don't want it to be sad, but I would want her upset.
Have to take the edge off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't want anything life-threatening, but if she's very upset about something, that works for us, too. Mm.
Yeah, but you know, it's been upsetting for Mr. Helix to see me sitting on the couch right before work with the gun in my mouth.
I'm sorry. Is Mr. Helix part of this show?
No.
No, he's not, so I don't care. Why would I care what he thinks?
Wow. Wow.
Those are his problems. He's got his radio show. He can vent there.
And I'm sure that if I'm not listening, he is. But
that's you're inhibiting his art.
I know. I'm like that buzzkill. That's me. But it's been really kind of scary because I've been at my current position for so long. I'm a nester, you know, and I stay places.
We're calling it now.
Yeah, that's what we call it. And you know,
I seen the nest. There's plenty of eggs in there.
Along with other stuff that she picked up along the way.
I know. And you know,
a stick.
You know what's
seriously a stick?
True. What's wrong with that?
No, it's from a cherry tree.
It's a special stick. Damn it! It's a divining rod. No, I'm kidding. Okay, but you know what's really scary, and this might be part of my having to turn over a new leaf, is that my new boss is a neatnik.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
What is Hoarder Pip going to do?
It's like when peanut butter and chocolate clash.
I know. I'm like, there's only so much that one little draw that they're going to give me is going to hold.
Are you slovenly at work?
No, not slovenly, but I do have like tchotchkes around.
What do you
got,
like a million post-its on the computer screen?
No.
Are you one of them?
No, but I do have piles on my desk are gigantic.
Three staplers in case two should go missing.
That you said that's wrong.
I mean, are you that person?
No, I, you know, well, my stapler art is important to me.
Stapler art.
I'm kidding. But it is going to be really weird. I just started, like, telling people at work. Now, you guys, because I've been there so long, I decided that I wanted to give, I feel like I need to give more than 2 weeks' notice.
No. They've made you miserable. Some people just leave.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
Sure you could. You just don't show up the next day.
No.
You can't
do
that, but 2 weeks,
I'm in the same industry.
2 weeks' notice is from what they put you through, 2 weeks' notice is the norm.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
yes.
Sure.
That's the professional thing to do. Obviously, if you do more, it's better. It's nice of you.
Yeah.
But you're not obligated to.
Huh. Okay. That's interesting. All right. Well, you know, that really...
Now you could keep it a secret.
Oh, that's going to be tough.
You don't have to. You can give them more notice. Give them a chance to woo. But it also potentially gives them a chance to make you miserable longer.
Yeah.
Because they could really up your workload.
No, they really can't because there's only so much a human can do.
Yeah, and sometimes when they do that, sometimes if it's longer, they try to force you out.
Yeah, no, I know that, but
so just make it. I would make it 2 weeks. Two
really,
weeks is fine.
Yeah, you think that's
from the way they treated you? 2 weeks is more than.
And just hope they don't listen to the show.
I know that they don't, but I'm hoping that my new employer does it because I'll be on probation. They better
double
not find this.
Probation.
Yeah, really. Well, that's why I have to like cover my buttocks with my fake name because if they found out, I probably would be out.
You see how good I was? I didn't say anything smart with that. That was a perfect opening.
Yes. Yes. Yes, as much as my buttocks have been a topic of conversation here.
All right. School of Fools, when we come back, last segment, Davin's down. Last segment of the show. Of course, you're listening to Davin's Den. It's been a fun show thus far, an informative show thus far. Sometimes bad things happen at schools. A lot more than they used to, it seems.
Yeah.
The media is doing a better job of reporting it to us. When that happens, we have a little segment called The School of Fools. As soon as I cue that up, gosh darn it, almost did it perfectly. Bucket full of posies, ashes, ashes, we all a 49-year-old substitute teacher in Pennsylvania, of course. We should play. We should play a game, Name That State, where we just do these stories and you have to guess what state this train. Like, you hear the whole story, and then from those details, you have to guess.
It's not a bad. That's not a bad idea. To tell you,
it's not.
Looks like that little gif of Bugs Bunny sawing off of Florida from one of the cartoons. Yeah. You should have some other cartoon character blowing up Pennsylvania. You know,
it's up for discussion.
Yeah, it's good.
We might be able to do that. That might be a new game.
Yeah.
Anyway, Pennsylvania, because you like to participate, is facing charges after cops interrupted her having sex with a 17-year-old boy in a cemetery.
Ah.
You know, I always like when I'm with my significant other, if I can see an expiration date on their rear end when it's over. So I find that headstones are perfect to lean him up against.
Your ass looks cute with 1847 on it.
It was a great year for asses, yeah. Joe.
Does their death date look, my ass look big?
Oh, let's see. Kelly Aldinger was hit with institutional sexual assault charges Tuesday morning and held on 50 large ones bail, according to the Allentown.
I thought they charged her in hay.
That's what I was thinking.
Did you see her? It's not far fetched. Oh, wow. not one of the better looking ones.
Her call of love. Oh, Wilbur. Yeah,
right. She's not famous. According to the Allentown Morning Call, the Lovebirds, okay, admitted that they had been in a relationship since last fall when the boy was just 16. In subsequent investigations, the wayward teacher, police did not discover any other victims. Well, no, this one was for reals. The graveyard superintendent, Jeff Mutchler, told the Allentown paper that he wasn't aware of the recent incident, but knew that sex in the cemetery was an ongoing problem.
Really?
How about you put up some barbed wire?
No, not a cemetery.
Why not? People keep on desecrating those graves.
Yeah.
No, you know.
You don't want to make it look like a penitentiary.
Yeah.
It's better than it looks like a brothel.
Panties hanging up on
them. Let me tell you something.
Let's do it in the mausoleum.
Yeah. When my former degenerate friend and I used to go drinking.
You and Joe are no longer friends?
Yeah, no. Joe and I are no longer speaking.
I applaud that decision.
One time we ended up, there was no place to go. We were teenagers. We ended up sitting and drinking in the cemetery. But she decided, because she was drunk, and you make good decisions when you're drunk, that the pantyhose that she was wearing were too restrictive and hot. So she took them off and tied them around the top of a cemetery stone. I'm like, you are a class act.
Well, you really
that's
made
awful.
You
really I know.
Made, you really made that story completely unhot when you brought pantyhose into the
equation. I know.
Pantyhose.
Well, when were you hanging out with Nana? Yeah.
Well, it was teenage Nana.
What teenager was wearing pantyhose?
I'm not even sure why she was wearing.
Because she never wanted to get laid.
Apparently not.
The funny thing is, it's like, Nana, I'm going to be marking my turf. It's almost time.
Well, that's why she's sitting at a great.
I like this one. It's Purdy. This is my lot.
Well, that's why she's sitting at a graveyard drinking with me instead of going out and getting
pantyhose?
Laid. Yeah, well, she took them off.
Well, if you're a woman, if you're a young girl
on
pantyhose, you are admitting you have no shot.
Yeah, but I'm an old, so you used to wear pantyhose back then.
No.
I don't know. That was about as sexy as a tax audit.
Well, you know, but it's in a cemetery. Was it supposed to be sexy?
Could have been better.
Weren't you afraid of ghosts and stuff?
No.
I'd be afraid of ghosts.
No, really? Not at all.
You think they watch?
Well, no, but
give it to her like she means it.
I know, but I don't want to be scared.
Yeah, but ghosts already moan. It would have gone with the idea.
You're really enjoying it. It's not me. It's Casper.
Yeah, yeah, Casper. Well, look at this. I see they say Casper is a friendly ghost.
Really? That was a struggle.
Thanks for trying to bail me out there, Jeff. Yeah. You thought only the grave digger had
every
a shovel.
Tool in the box to get that one to fly.
It didn't, Wright Brothers. You're no Orville.
Nope, went right in the trees.
But here's the interesting thing. This is an ongoing problem. Until at least sometime last year, Aldinger, the teacher, served as council president at St. Paul's the Third Lutheran Church, according to the Lehigh Valley News.
Oh, no.
Of course she was. How could it be worse?
Why is it always church people that do this stuff?
Devout. Because 16 is the age of consent in the Keystone State, Ulster does not face statutory rape charges. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
But if found guilty on the institutional sex assault, she could face 7 years behind bars and a $15,000 fine.
institutional sex assault. Doesn't it sound like, I don't know, like she found somebody strapped to a gurney and went at it? What,
yeah,
institutional
really,
sex assault?
I kind of feel...
to a building?
I kind of feel that these two kids felt like they were in love. Well, mm-hmm. one of them was a kid.
And yeah, I was like, these two kids? What?
I kind of feel like they wanted to make it public and get caught.
Oh, because it was hotter to be in public?
No,
because
I just think they felt burdened sneaking around, so why not do it in a cemetery?
No, too much to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seven,
no,
7 years behind bars and a $15,000 fine.
Because we know criminals always think of the repercussions.
Yeah, but wasn't she a teacher? So
she was a substitute, so not so much.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, she wasn't a very good teacher. I didn't say that.
Nobody wants to bang the substitute teacher.
No, really. That's
49 years old.
Yeah,
well,
whoa.
I mean, is that even a good story?
Well, considering I'm older than that, are you saying that's not sexy?
No, but not if you're 16. No 16's wanting. I'm going to go on the limb and say no 16-year-old's wanting to sleep with any of us. I am going to go on the limb with that.
And I think I'm going to throw up a little in my mouth thinking about sleeping with a 16-year-old.
I threw up in my mouth when you brought in pantyhose.
You think you're the ones who brought up Nana, you sick tickets.
You think the boys are, like, disappointed? It's like, really? It couldn't be a biology teacher. It had to be the substitute that still lives with her own parents. Really?
I know. This is the best I could do.
Really? We expected so much more. Not even a lesbian gym teacher that you converted. This is the best you do?
That you converted. Like you could.
You could?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You went, oh, sure you could.
Not my gym teachers. No.
Yours had beards and looked like lumberjacks.
Actually, try as I might to convert them. Oh, wait. Darn.
Well, pantyhose ain't gonna cut the mustard, sis.
I'm not going to convert them if they're female teachers.
Well, we have another fool in school.
Oh.
It is. No, I'm talking about this one, not another story.
Oh, okay.
Christ almighty. She is impossible. Good luck at your new job, Pip.
Thank you.
Good, you're their problem now. Anyway, this has been Davin's Den. As always, go to davinsden.com. Follow us on Twitter at Davin's Den. Like us on Facebook, Davin's Den. Thank you all for hanging out. We'll see you soon. If you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us,
tell no one.
Either way, keep on listening.